brought to you by Penguin.
On the Slow Train, written by Michael Williams and read by Michael Tudor Barnes. Introduction. On the Slow Train. There are few things more evocative of the British landscape than the country branch line. A little engine chuffs along a single track, a few wisps of steam drifting across the fields, the sun glinting off its copper-capped chimney. There might be a couple of elderly carriages, and perhaps a milk tank or a cattle truck in tow. Nobody much comes or goes on the immaculately tended platforms. Somehow, here it always seems to be summer. At least that's how we like to imagine it. Of course, Britain's railways haven't been like this since Dr. Richard Beeching, one of the great bogeymen of modern times, came along with his axe in 1963 and shut down more than 4,000 miles of track. Back then, the comedy-songwriting duo Michael Flanders and Donald Swann caught the mood of the nation in their song Slow Train. Mourning the closure of all those marvellous old local railway stations, with their wonderful, evocative names, all due to be axed and done away with one by one. No Churns, no Porter, no Cat on a Seat, at Chalton-cum-Hardy or Chesterler Street, they sang. No one departs and no one arrives, from Selby to Goole, from St. Erth to St. Ives. They've all passed out of our lives. Flanders and Swann's song was an elegy for the passing of a less hurried way of life. But fortunately, nearly half a century on from the publication of Beeching's The Reshaping of British Railways, we have learnt to love and cherish our local railways again. Slow trains on local lines offer an unrivalled way to travel around Britain in a hurried age, and they've always been more than just a way of getting from A to B. As the historian David St. John Thomas observed, the local railway has always provided more than transport. It was always part of the district it served, with its own natural history, its own legends and folklore, a staff who were at the heart of village affairs, its stations and adjoining pubs, places for exchange of gossip, news and advice. Its mourners recognised that more than British Rail's statistics would be lost when it died. Luckily for us, many secondary lines didn't die at the hands of Beeching, and are still here to offer the modern traveller some of the greatest journeys in Britain, and sometimes the world. There's no longer any talk of shutting Dreamingham on the Marsh or Sleepy Town in the Wold. On the contrary, a report from the main train operating companies in 2009 urged the reopening of 14 branch lines that had been closed by Beeching. Meanwhile, passenger journeys in Britain are up by half since privatisation. And while the little old steam engines and wizened porters may be gone, many of the lines and stations that survived the cull have prospered as never before. Local railways these days often thrive as community rail partnerships, where everyone in the locality, from the town hall to the elderly lady volunteer who plants out the geraniums in the station platform tubs, can have a stake in the future of the line. Even though we hear a lot about high-speed rail lines expanding all over the world, the pleasures and delights of relaxed rail travel have never been more appreciated. In almost every way, the slow train journey is more pleasurable than a fast one. Think of Edward Thomas's poem, Adlestrop, in which his express train stopped unwontedly one June afternoon at an Oxfordshire country station. What he saw and heard was nothing special. The hiss of steam, an empty platform, a man clearing his throat. Yet suddenly a blackbird sang, summoning up for Thomas a profound sense of the timelessness of the English countryside. Or perhaps the most evocative slow train journey of all, Philip Larkin's Whitsun Weddings, written on the afternoon train from Hull. Not till about 1:20 on the sunlit Saturday did my three-quarters empty train pull out, all windows down, all cushions hot.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?